On this week's episode, we take a nostalgic look back at two of my guitars and a comic book I love called Bone. I tell some personal stories and anecdotes and tell you why you should love something that I love as much as I love it. I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to Empty Checking, the show that, I'm a little bit unprepared this week. I knew that I had an episode coming up, but I really didn't buy anything in the last week, and I don't have anything kind of sitting that's new enough that I'm excited about talking about it as a new thing, so I'm kind of winging it this week. But I did narrow down a couple of things that I've got sitting around that I just wanted to talk about. That one of them kind of came up at work, and I'm also going to talk about a couple of the guitars that I own. Because I own a lot of guitars, and every guitar that I have has one story or another. So I thought it might be interesting for those of you who enjoy the musical part of my life to hear about a couple of my guitars. And I'm also going to talk about a comic book that I like a lot that I haven't read in a while, but that I would like to share with others, because it's one that even the non-comic fan, I think, can get into this comic book. But first, let me read you the list of websites associated with the show that you should go to. If you want to check out the blog, see photos, and get other information, the companion blog is at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're searchable on iTunes and CastBox and other podcast apps. You just start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink, and you can find me and subscribe there and get the show delivered right to your favorite podcasting device. Not on Spotify. Really hard to get a podcast on Spotify for some reason. So I'll probably never be on Spotify. Sorry. If you want to know more about me, you can go over to DerekBrink.com. There's plenty of stuff to click on there. If you like the music that you hear throughout the show, it's available for absolutely free at DerekBrink.bandcamp.com. I don't even collect your email address. Like I said, just not a lot of stuff that's new that I'm excited about right now. There's stuff coming out. In fact, on Friday this week, I'm looking forward to picking up the new album by Amanda Shires. I believe it's called To the Sunset. I've actually done a pre-order of it on her website, and I hope it gets here by Friday. If not, I might have to pick up the CD. But I grabbed a vinyl copy from her website in a pre-order, so I'm looking forward to that. So that's in the future, and there's a couple other things coming up in the not-too-distant future I want to talk about, but I really didn't have anything new this week. The only thing that kind of counts as new this week is that my car went into the shop again. The back windows seem to have a problem at roughly the 10-year mark. It's a 2009 vehicle, and we're in 2018 now, so yeah, it's a 10-year-old car. A couple, 4 or 6 months ago, something like that, my back passenger side window just sunk down into the car and it wouldn't come back up. So I took that in and they fixed it for $300 and change. And then the other day I was driving home from work and got on the highway and just heard like a lot of wind. And I looked back and the back window on the driver's side, the other side of the car, had done the exact same thing. Just sunk down into the car and wouldn't come back up. So apparently that's an issue with 10-year-old Mercury Mariners. The windows eventually fall into the car for no reason. Those aren't even the windows I use. That's really frustrating. Like, I don't put those up and down ever, and they still just collapsed on me for some reason, 6 months apart from each other. So in another 6 months, I'm expecting to have to replace one of the front ones or whatever they do. So anyway, it's not convenient, but that's the only other kind of exciting thing, I guess, that's going on. I'm just it's kind of a down period for new stuff right now. So fortunately, we've got old stuff we could talk about. I'm going to play a little bit of music. We're going to come back and I'm going to talk to you about one of my guitars. And then we'll do that again and I'll talk about a comic book. And then we'll do that again and I'll talk about a different guitar. So we'll break up the guitars that way. As for other stuff, wrestling this week was a lot of fun, but I don't really have anything I want to say about it. So I liked both shows. There's your week of wrestling stuff, or your wrestling stuff for the week, however you want to think of it. But yeah, for now we're gonna do kind of a nostalgic show in some ways here. We'll come back and I'll tell you about one of the guitars in my arsenal. Here's a little bit of music. Take it away, me. One man stand idly by, and another man a savior. One man choose to give his life, and another man pull the trigger. One man give all that he got, and one man drown in riches. One man bathe in the fire alive, and another burned by what he is. And then, oh, and then he is a man. And then, oh, and then. I'm limiting the songs this week to songs off of my album Grounds, which was my very first album. I'm doing that because the guitars that I'm planning on talking about today were both featured on that record, and I can't necessarily say that for the other records. So that's kind of what you're getting there. The first instrument I want to talk about is actually a bass. I keep saying guitar, but you know, whatever. It's a bass guitar, so there you go. It's a bass. It's my, I think it's a 1994, if memory serves, 93, 94. I could open it up inside and probably find a date stamped on something, but I'm not going to do that. It's either a 93 or a 94 purple Ibanez EX series bass. This is the bass that I've had the longest. It's one of the guitars that I've had the longest, although I do have older guitars. It's the one that's been in my possession, I think, the longest. It's not the first bass I ever owned. The first bass I ever owned, I am never going to see again. I loaned it to a friend who is no longer a friend, and I'm never going to see him again, and that's, I'm sure he's pawned it by now. So I don't actually have the first bass I ever owned. That's kind of a bummer. I really wish I did, just for sentimental reasons. But sometimes a friend screws you over. In fairness, I loaned it to him willingly and was expecting to get it back, and I believe he was expecting to give it back. But time passes strangely. I went off to college for a bit. We lost touch. I'm actually kind of thankful for that because he was a terrible person. And I'm sure he's pawned that bass by now. So I don't think it was like intentional theft on that one. But yeah, it's long gone. The first one I ever owned was a white Kingston electric bass, and I don't know of any other Kingston guitars out there. I think I bought it from a pawn shop for like $50, and it was the first bass I ever had. I didn't even know how to tune the thing. But anyway, that one's long gone. I do kind of miss having it around, though. That's not the one we're talking about, though. We're talking about my purple Ibanez EX series bass. This is a bass that I learned how to play on. It was actually kind of interesting how I got it in the first place, because like I said, I had that $50 white deal that was just kind of... You would describe it as a beater, I guess. If you were, you could just beat it up, and who cares? It was $50. But I was in a band, and we were rehearsing regularly and stuff. And I remember one day, I don't remember why we were there, but I remember I was at Dale's Music when it was still open over on Lindbergh, and I guess that's probably Hazelwood, Missouri. And we were there and sort of looking around and stuff, and the purpose of it might have been signing me up for lessons. I'm not really sure, because I was getting serious about it, and I wanted to learn how to play it better and so on and so forth. And while we were there, my memory is I was there with my mom. So my memory is that Mom actually pointed that bass out to me because it was on sale, the purple EX series bass, because it was on sale. And I think just as a part of getting me lessons, she asked if I wanted a new bass, and I said yes, and that one came into my life. She bought it, it was laid away for a little bit, if memory serves, and one day it came home, and I don't remember that being for like a special event, like a birthday or a Christmas or something like that. I think just weirdly out of the kindness of her heart, mom just decided the kid needs a real bass, like one that actually is full size and is a brand that people have heard of. I think she just saw that I was going to take this seriously, and why not give me the tools to succeed rather than a cheap pawn shop bass that eventually a friend of mine would himself pawn. You know, mom could be encouraging when she wanted to be. It was kind of a rarity, but she could be encouraging when she wanted to be in between fits of yelling. So she did that. It was one of the handful of gestures that mom ever made for me musically that suggested that she believed in me. So I appreciated that. I'm making her sound worse than she was, I think. But mom, you know, I think for a long time in my musical stuff, just kind of was like, it's a hobby, whatever. But she, I guess, at least knew I was taking it seriously enough that I needed a good bass. So I got the EX series, started taking lessons, learning how to play it, learned how to tune it, and I was off and running. That bass was used for most of my early career as a musician. It was all over the Union Jack stuff. If you go over to derekbrink.bandcamp.com and download the 1990-something Union Jack demo that's on the Bandcamp page, that bass is all over that. It was the only one I had. It was the only one I played at that time. So that's check that out if you want to hear the bass in its full form. But I also used it on the Grounds record. It's on the song One Man. It's prevalent there. I like that bass a lot, and I still like the tone of it. It's beat up. It's got chips and dings and all kinds of things, but that thing has been a road warrior. That thing has survived a lot. It survived my teenage years. It's been dropped. It's been thrown against walls in stupid incidents I'd rather forget. It's been in mosh pits. It's been, you know, who knows what. It's had things spilled on it. It's had things poured on it. It's had things done to it. It's held up, and it's still one that is in my house. It's still in my possession. I'll put some pictures of it on the website or on the blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. And it's still a cool bass. I still like the sound of it. I especially like if you turn off the middle tone knob. It has a really kind of interesting gritty sound to it, that almost a Steve Harris from Iron Maiden sound to it that I really like, and I should probably play it more than I do, but it's, I don't remember even the last time I did play it, to be honest with you, and the strings on there I'm sure need to be changed before I noodle with it, you know? But it's a cool bass. It's a bass that I like a lot. It's a bass that I'm glad that I still have. I'm glad that, my crappy friend, I'll have to censor that name, sorry. I'm glad that he didn't pawn that one. Can you tell that I'm still bitter about that? Can you tell that still eats at me a little bit? I should try and find a Kingston bass, just a cheap, crappy $50 Kingston bass somewhere. And who knows? Maybe they're worth $1 million now. It's been 20 years. By the way, I've been playing bass for over 20 years. I think 2 years ago was my 20th anniversary as a bass player. Or maybe more than that. Because, let's see, that would have been 93, 94 or so. Yeah, probably 2014 would have been 20 years. Anyway, so coming up on 25, I guess. Wow, that's weird. Sorry, I'm realizing all this as I'm talking to you. This is the disadvantage of not doing any research or preparation. But I liked that bass a lot. It was so cool to have it and cool to bring it home for the first time and to play it in my band and to create some of the early concepts of who I've now become as a writer on that bass. And I hold on to it. I cherish it. It's not worth much, but it's worth a lot to me. It's an Ibanez, so it plays a variety of styles really well, but is especially good on, you know, kind of punky or heavier music. Takes effect pedals like a dream, because I have gone through long phases where I've used distortions and stuff on bass, and That one distorts real good. I've got a couple of basses that distort pretty good, but I like, I don't know, there's something very punk rock about that bass, and I like it a lot. And the purple's one of my favorite colors too, so that kind of factors in. And it's just a cool bass, and it's a cool 90s era bass when they were built a little bit better, even on the ones that were sort of manufactured cheaply. I like it a lot. It's cool. And I think that's about all I have to say about it. I do remember that one story, this going back to Mom again, the Rush album Counterparts was out, and I was learning Rush songs and learning how to play Rush songs, and I was I remember one day I was playing Animate off the Counterparts album, and Dad was in the room and he was kind of listening to me practice and pointed out to Mom, "Hey, look at what he's doing. You know, like, listen to him play that." And she was like, "What? He's just pretending to play along to the music." He was like, "No, he's playing that." And so kind of there you go, Mom. I took it serious, you know. And thanks, Dad, for believing that I was actually playing it, which I was. So it's, I don't know, I got a lot of good memories about that bass. And yeah, I just wanted to talk about it for a little while. Go to the blog, look at some pictures of it. Maybe I'll even try to find some pictures of when I was younger and more virile and playing it in the band and whatnot with Union Jack, with my buddy Mark. Hi, Mark. Know you're a fan of the show. And also Mike. Hi, Mike. I have no idea what happened to you. But I hope you're listening. I hope you're doing okay. Yeah, go check out the pictures. Relive some memories with me. Hopefully I'll find a few embarrassing ones of all of us as kids. So that's something to look forward to when you go to the blog this week. Folks, I want to talk to you about a comic book that stole my heart at a young age and that I think is great for kids of all ages, from 6 to 60, but no older. It's one of my favorite books. It's one of my favorite forms of anything. It's one of my favorite things that's ever been written. I'm talking about the comic book Bone by Jeff Smith. Now, I'm trying to remember, actually. I may have actually already talked about this on the old version of the show that I was doing, what, like 7 years ago. If that's the case, and if you remember that, congratulations for remembering that. You're one heck of a great fan. Me, I think I might have. I don't remember, but I'm going to talk about it now. The whole thing's like a reboot. It's like the previous show didn't happen, but I want to talk to you about Bone, and the reason I want to talk to you about Bone is this week I was talking to a coworker who has a comic book store very near to their house, and they have young children who are trying to get into comic books, and the comic book shop that's near their house is one of the ones that takes it real seriously, you know, and like it's not, because that happens, because comic books are all ages now. In fact, they're more geared toward adults than they are children these days. Comic book stores, a lot of them become places that aren't as welcoming to children as you want them to be. And the one by their house is one of those. So my coworker was kind of lamenting that and kind of wishing that there was something that they could tell their kid to get into. And the first thing that popped into my mind was, well, how old are your kids? And they're 7 to 9, in that range. And I said, you know what? Go someplace and find them a copy of the first trade paperback of Bone. It's called Out from Boneville is the first one. Go pick that up and introduce it to them. It's by a guy named Jeff Smith. It's charming. It's cartoony. It's really sweet. And it goes off the rails after a few issues, because it's a really sweet story. It's a beautiful story. It's very Lord of the Ringsy. Like, there's a dragon that you meet almost immediately. The characters themselves are little white sort of shmoo looking things. You remember shmoos? They look like shmoos. And there's sort of a love story there. There's a female hero in it as well. There's awesome old grandma. There's there's rat creatures that are idiots and like one who's actually mean. And there's good, there's evil. The first book out from Boneville, I remember my brother brought it home and showed it to me, and I was just immediately hooked. I actually vividly remember that year was, it was over a summer. That year, our air conditioner in our house broke down, and we were staying with my grandma for a week or so. And I remember Dave had those issues, had the first two trades. By the way, for those of you who don't know what a trade paperback is, what that is it's a compilation of a few issues of a comic book. It's like issues 1 through 3, 1 through 6, whatever. It's a story bound into a single book. It's an arc bound into a single book. So that's what I mean when I'm saying trades. I remember Dave had the first two trades at Grandma's house, and I remember reading them there and just being anxious for the next trade to come out. And he only had the first two trades. He had Out from Boneville, and he had The Great Cow Race. And I don't think the story was even finished yet. I think those two trades came out, and then it was just waiting for more issues to be written, even. But here's the thing. I wasn't chasing the issues, and it was actually hard to find Bone for a very long time, because its writer, Jeff Smith, was publishing independently. I think the label Cartoon Books is now his actual publisher, and I think that's his company. But he was doing things independently, and there would be long waits because he was a guy. He was just a guy trying to make this happen, and that process can take up a lot of your time, and there can be a long wait between issues. And Dave wasn't as avid a comic reader. He wasn't the kind of guy that went and picked up issues every week. I eventually became that guy for a while, but I got out of it when it got too expensive, because my pull and hold every week was like $50 a week. I couldn't keep doing that. But anyway, we just had those first two trades, and we didn't have issues. We weren't chasing after issues. I think even if we had been chasing issues, we would have been very unlikely to find them because of how limited distribution Jeff Smith had at the time. So I had those first two trades, and I loved those first two trades. And by I mean Dave, had those first two trades. And we'd keep talking about Bone, and when comic books would come up, I'd talk to other people about Bone, and, well, have you read Bone? No, I haven't read Bone. And I've been having a variant of that conversation ever since I first read Bone in the 90s. Because the first publication of Bone was in 1991, so I would have been about 11 years old. And I've been having the conversation of, have you read Bone, since I was 11 years old. I'm 38 now. So that's how long my love affair with Bone has been. So, like anything that you can't find the next edition of, like anything that you have to chase like that, eventually my love of Bone persisted, but my quest for it kind of ebbed. And I went several years just trying to resolve myself to the fact that I was just never going to know how Bone ends. I'm never going to know what happens. Because it starts out so sweet and so cute and so adorable and so funny, and it retains that for the length of the run, but you get a sense pretty early of something bigger that's happening, and something more epic that's happening. There are a lot of rat creatures. They're chasing them out of their house and home. There's a mysterious hooded figure that shows up at the end of the first trade, and just you want to know what happens next. And if you're able to, you jump immediately into the next trade, The Great Cow Race, and you just start digging into that. And it's also adorable and sweet and cute and funny, but there's also still something bigger building and brewing, and it's getting more intense, and it's getting more serious, and it progresses that way for 9 different trades, and goes through a war, and goes through the ultimate battle of good and evil, and goes through this innocent creature having to face down ultimate evil. It's very Hobbity in that way, very Lord of the Ringsy in that way, but it's in no way a ripoff. It's such a sweet, funny story with such an epic backdrop to it. It's beautifully done. It's one of my favorite things in the world. Here's the thing. I only had the first two chapters of that for something like 10 to 15 years. And I kind of had just resolved myself to, well, that's a charming book, but I'm never going to know what happens. I don't even know if he's finishing what happens. I don't know if he ran out of money. I can't find it anywhere. I'm moving on. So, years go by, and I'm in a Borders bookstore. May Borders rest in peace. I'm in a Borders bookstore, and I'm just walking through the graphic novels section, not thinking two thoughts about it. I think I'm on my way to someplace else, probably on my way back to music, and I stop in the graphic novel section, and sitting on the shelf with the front cover facing outward is a phone book-sized volume of Bone. And I remember with a chill down my spine right now while I'm telling you about it, looking and saying, oh God, he finished it. And I knew I was walking out of that store with that book. And I picked it up and I showed Dave and he was like, wow, cool. You know, and I took it up to the front and I bought it and I left with it. And I read the whole of it, I think, in a matter of like 2 days. And that was when I was still in college. I remember very specifically, I was working my college job in a library. And it was a night shift. And there was, you know, people would come in and read, but they were quiet. They were studying for stuff and they'd leave. I remember very specifically ignoring all of the tasks I'd been assigned that night and just sitting in the office and reading Bone. I figured, yeah, you know, I'm a librarian, I'm reading, it's fine. But I didn't do a bit of work that night. Instead, I read Bone. Sorry, Terry and Jan. They were my bosses. But it was the culmination of a 10 to 15 year wait. And I've got to tell you this, I got to the end of that phone book sized volume, and I closed it, and my first thought was, that was absolutely worth the wait. I can't wait to start it again. And I've loaned out that book over time. I've loaned it to my brother. I loaned it to a former roommate I had. I've loaned it to several people. It's well-worn at this point. I should probably buy a new complete volume of it. But it's a treasured thing to me. That has such an emotional story for me. What's great is a few years later, Jeff Smith got hooked up with the Scholastic people. And Bone, for all the time I had known it, had been in black and white. But the Scholastic people released it as 9 separate trades, just as it was always meant to be, not the single overwhelming volume. 9 different trades that are easy to digest, easy to get through, and they're fully colored trades. Every page of it is in color, and it's beautifully colored. It's beautifully inked, beautifully colored. Everything's shaded, and it's exactly how it looked in my head when I was reading it in black and white. It's so beautiful. I don't know how they did that. It's just perfect. And there are 9 of those. And when they came out, I bought them immediately. And I, again, enjoyed reading the story. I'm sitting here talking to you right now about it. And I know that throughout the next week, I'm going to be reading that story again. Because Bone is just such a beautiful adventure and is so elegantly done and is so funny and so sweet and so charming and so emotional in places. There are places in this that if you get invested in the right way, you'll flat out make you cry. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And there's a couple places where you'll be laughing out loud, too, in the same heartbeat. Jeff Smith is an incredibly talented writer. Bone is one of the best things that's ever been written. If you ask me, go out, do this for me. Go out to a bookstore or go to Amazon, whatever. Just get the first trade. Just get the first Scholastic Out from Boneville trade. Just pick it up. If you get to the end of it and you don't like it, you don't have to continue, but just read the first one. Please just read the first one. Let's get Jeff some money. I think he also sells them through his website, which is boneville.com. Don't worry, it's about the comic book. It's not what it sounds like. I've had to explain that to people in the past. Boneville.com. I think he sells the books through there too, if you want to give him money a little bit more directly. That'd be cool of you. Bone is just gorgeous. Just elegant and perfect. Over the years, I've gotten to watch Jeff turn into a more thriving career. He was struggling to even get the comics out at one point, and now he's hooked up with Scholastic. He's got ongoing stories. He's got new stuff that he's written, that both in the Bone universe and outside of it. But he's also got other merchandise. You can click around boneville.com and see some of the other merchandise. There are toys out there, although the toys are kind of hard to find. They're a very limited run. I've got a lot of them. They're all actually kind of stashed away right now, so I'm not going to put any pictures of those on the website. But I am going to put pictures of the plush toys that I found in my local fantasy shop one day. I was just, I was picking up the comics I was getting that week, and I looked over, and there were these Bone plush toys sitting there of the three Bone cousins that are featured in the book. And I bought them immediately. I was like, I have to have those. And they're sitting in my bookshelves right now. And I'll put up pictures of that. I actually went to boneville.com before recording this, just to kind of click around his shop and make sure that web link was still working. I didn't want to direct you to something terrible. And he's actually selling another plush toy there that I think I'm going to have to get because it's of this character called Bartleby, which is a sweet little furry thing. And, I don't have that one. So I think I have to go to Boneville and pick up the Bartleby, plush as well. It's just so cool that this accidental discovery of a comic book, I've gotten to watch this guy grow into an empire, and it's just been cool to be a part of that, and I'm so proud of Jeff Smith, and I'm so proud of that journey, and it's been a journey for me. It's been a journey that is hard to describe because I could see where you might think that, well, I've read the comic now, that 10 to 15 year wait is over, and now what have I got to look forward to? I've got to look forward to reading it again. And I've got to look forward to sharing that love with other people. That's what happens when you become a fan of something. You become an evangelist of that thing. And I love telling new people about Bone and hearing new people come back to me after they've read Bone and say, oh man, thanks for recommending that. Because I've not had anyone that I've recommended it to that's actually picked it up and read it. I've not had a single person come back to me and say, yeah, that sucks, it's not my cup of tea. I've only had people come back to me and say, I ordered the next one. So that's I ringing endorsement after ringing endorsement of Bone from everybody I talk to about it. It's just one of those next level fandom books that I don't know why people aren't cosplaying that all the time at Comic-Con and things like that. They really should be. It's at one point there were even CD-ROM video games made by the Telltale people, but that fell apart because Telltale fell apart. But I played those. I downloaded and played those at one point, and they're fine. They're limited by the time that they were made, but they're out there. They're findable. It's just so cool to have watched that sprout up and happen with something that, if you had asked me 2 years after the first time I read it, if I ever thought I'd hear of it again, I'd say, nah, it's just going to sit on my brother's shelf. And what's cool is my brother moved into a new house recently, and as part of that, sort of put out his bookshelves and stuff, and I was just kind of walking through his living room, and he's got bookshelves there, and Bone was just sitting on the shelf there, and it was that same copy that I read as a kid in Grandma's house, and it was sitting there, and it was the early trade before it was stamped Scholastic, before it was stamped with the graphics logo, before it was in color. It was just sitting there, and it was a walk down memory lane just to see that and go, wow, I remember that. I remember when that was such an obsessively hard thing to find, and It was just a really cool experience to see that on Dave's shelf, and I guess it's just been on my mind ever since, and I wanted to share my love of it with you. Go over to boneville.com, click around, take a look at what Jeff Smith does. He's got other projects that he does that are also absolutely worth your time, but Bone is his masterwork, and it's a masterpiece, and I can't recommend it enough. And it's been on my mind, so I wanted to talk about it. You can go over to the blog, and I'll have pictures of the trades and the full volume thing that I have there, and my plush toys and stuff. I love this thing. Nine volumes, each of them pretty quickly readable, pretty quickly digestible. If you want to buy them one at a time, that's great. I say save yourself the time and just buy all nine. because it's you're gonna want to read all of them or buy the single volume edition. There's a few single volume editions out there, and those will be in black and white, though. I don't think there's a color version out, but there might be by now. I'm not sure. I haven't looked, but the Scholastic ones are beautifully colored, so I recommend reading those. But if you want to read the black and white, hey, that's how I did it, and it's I fell in love with it that way. So go check out Bone. Please go check out Bone, because it's just one of the things that makes me happy in this world, and I think it could make you happy too, unless you're just jaded and dead inside. But if that's the case, come back next week. Maybe we'll talk about some heavy metal or something.
I am a stranger. This land sets me reeling, and I feel I'm lost. I am just passing. I'm just looking for some shelter, maybe a touch of trust. And I know that soon.
The other guitar I wanted to talk to you about today is also featured heavily on the Grounds record, available at derekbrink.bandcamp.com. It's the main electric that I used on that album. Although I used kind of a mishmash of a couple of different guitars, this was the main one. It's on most of the songs, if you hear an electric guitar, it's this guitar. It's my Silvertone, which for some reason I affectionately call Junior. I don't have any idea what year it is. I'm told it's from the 50s, but I don't really know. This is another story that involves Dale's music. I was up there, I think, to buy some strings or cables or something, and they had just gotten a guitar in on trade that they hadn't even priced yet. It was an old Silvertone, kind of rusty pink color, and just a beaten up old thing. The back at that time was painted bright yellow for some reason, which I actually figured out why, because I got all the yellow paint off the back, and the back's all scraped up and scratched up. I think someone was trying to refinish it, and they didn't do the job all the way, so they just painted it yellow. But to me, that's part of the charm. They had it in the shop, they'd just gotten it in, they hadn't even priced it, and I said, well, how much do you want for that? And I think they said $150, which at that point in my life was a lot of money, because I was a college student and working a job at the college library. But I know a deal when I hear it, and I know a cool guitar when I see it. So I said, okay, I'll take it. Can I put it on layaway? And they said, yeah, sure. So over the next couple of weeks to months, I made little payments where I could, and I took it home with me. And I've got this old Silvertone that frankly needs a lot of work, but I've never done any of it. I've just used it as is. Like, the tone knob does nothing, and the volume knob crackles. The I guess plate over the wires and stuff in the back is loose. Like I said, the back's all dinged up from, I think, someone trying starting and stopping a refinish or something. There's various problems with it here and there, but I really like it. It's a really comfortable guitar to play. It sounds great. It's not a lead guitar. It's a rhythm guitar. Haven't played it in a little while, just because I've got really nice guitars now. And like I said, it's a rhythm guitar. And when I very often will take lead parts on a guitar, so I tend to use one that's a little bit better for lead when I'm doing my stuff these days. But who knows? Maybe I'll put some new strings on the old Silvertone, and I'll take it to church or something. It's a cool guitar. I like it a lot. It has that classic sound to it. And like I said, it's all over Grounds. I'm sure that it's the guitar you hear on Fall Apart. I'm sure it's the guitar you hear on Stranger. Battle Cry actually isn't. Battle Cry is a song that I used an old guitar of my grandpa's on, an old electric of his that's now hanging on my wall. It's kind of retired. Just most of the electric guitars on Grounds is that Silvertone. Diner is definitely that Silvertone, and that probably features it the best, because it's just the electric guitar and vocal on that song. So that'd be a good one to check out if you want to hear what that guitar is capable of. Go on over to derekbrink.bandcamp.com and check out Diner on the Grounds album, and you'll hear that Silvertone. It's a very lightweight guitar. It feels like it's cardboard. It's honestly only about a step above cardboard. It's sort of a crappy little guitar in some ways. There are similar models out there. Silvertone, basically, if I understand correctly, made guitars for the Sears Roebuck catalog. And so there are a handful of them out there. I've seen them go in good shape for a few hundred bucks, $600 to $1,000 in good shape. Mine is not in that kind of shape. Mine is probably in the $100 to $150 shape, which is what I paid for it, so that's appropriate. It's really cool. I like playing it, and I should play it more. I should definitely use it as backing tracks on whatever my next album is. But I don't have a lot else to say about it. It was just a good deal that I took at a time when I needed a guitar, an electric guitar. It is responsible, I think, for some of the writing that I've done. It's responsible for me becoming a better guitar player in a lot of ways, because I started out playing bass, and I learned theory well enough on bass that I could figure out guitar chord structures, and there were always guitars around my house. I had a couple of guitars before that, acoustics mostly, and you noodle around and you get okay. This one was the first guitar that with my own money I bought. So I bought it myself, I paid for it myself, I laid it away and saved up, and it was an achievement. So I was going to play it, and I was going to play it well. And a lot of the songs that my previous band Uncle Dick did were written on that guitar, and it's a guitar that I've used for writing a lot of stuff in the past. Like I said, I haven't used it in a little while because I've just got different guitars now that I feel a duty to play the nice ones, you know? So my Rickenbacker gets a look in before the Silvertone these days. But I like the Silvertone a lot. Buying it made me a better guitarist. It helped me start shaping my electric sound and what I wanted it to be. When I bought the guitar, I didn't even have a guitar amp. I didn't have my own guitar amp. I was playing through whatever the guitarist and Uncle Dick was playing through at the time. I was just borrowing his amp occasionally to record demos. So when I did the Grounds album, a lot of that was done by plugging into Line 6 equipment and using one of their amp modelers. I mean, that wasn't even... I didn't have an amp for the longest time, and I had an electric guitar. But it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting sort of step on my journey to becoming the songwriter that I am, and I wanted to give it a little bit of love. Wanted to talk about it. The guitar strap on it still has the price tag from Dale's Music sort of on it. so it's not for the guitar, the price tag for the guitar strap. So that's kind of interesting too. It's one of the cheapest guitar straps that I own. it's on one of the guitars that I kind of love the best, just because it was so foundational to who I eventually became as a writer. So that's the story of my Silvertone. That's the story of Junior. Go check out the photos of it that I'm going to post on the blog. I think you'll agree that it is a guitar. Old man comes through here every day, drinks his coffee and slips away. Sits there lonely in his chair, baseball cap covers his hair. Has his story like a... So that's it. Kind of a different one this week of just old stuff. Nothing new to talk about, really. Next week, I'll have some new stuff to talk about. I'll talk about the Amanda Shires album. I'll talk about maybe some TV stuff. I gotta get caught up on Deadliest Catch and whatnot. Maybe we'll talk some wrestling. We're getting closer to SummerSlam and stuff starting to pick up a little bit. But I don't know. I thought maybe you'd enjoy hearing about what I'm interested in when I'm not interested in something new. So there's a little bit of stuff that you can dig into, maybe. Just a look back with Derek, I guess, this week. Plenty of stuff still coming up on the horizon and new releases and whatnot. There's going to be a new season of the Venture Brothers soon, and I love the Venture Brothers. I'm looking forward to talking about that with you in the near future. There's a new Elvis Costello record coming out, I think, in October, if memory serves. Love Elvis Costello. Elvis Costello, incidentally, had a cancer diagnosis recently. I Haven't heard any updates. I hope he's doing okay. I had the pleasure of seeing Elvis Costello a couple years ago with my brother, in mostly an acoustic show, which I really enjoyed. And I think Dave probably would have enjoyed seeing him with the band a little bit better. But I'm sure he still enjoyed the acoustic show. But I have a big place in my heart for Elvis Costello, so I hope he's doing okay, and I'm looking forward to hearing his new album. But that's kind of where we are this week. Update on last week, I have not, you'll be proud of me, some of you who know that I need to save money, I have not yet bought the Strymon Mobius, but I'm still looking at it. I would still like to be able to buy it, but there's gonna have to be some money stashed away first. It's been a little bit tight here in July. That's okay, we've got August to make it up, so it's maybe come September or so we'll have a Mobius on the old pedal board, and I'll talk about that. But in the meantime, thanks a lot for putting up with me just kind of winging it here this week. Who knows, maybe I'll do this from time to time. I'll just talk about stuff that I've liked in the past and talk about why it still means something to me, even if I haven't read it in a little while or heard it in a little while. That's kind of fun for me, and it got me all energized talking about Bone this week. So maybe I'll do that from time to time, or maybe I'll do the thing that I promised to do in one of the very early shows here, and I'll play one of my old records and just do a commentary over it one of these weeks. That might be fun. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Whatever happens, I appreciate you being here with me. I appreciate you letting me do this. It's always so much fun for me to do this. I look forward to it every week, and I love it when people talk to me about this thing, both in person and online. Got some nice comments over the last couple of weeks from several people, and thanks everybody for listening. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate you being out there. There's no point to me doing this without you hearing it, so I really appreciate all the attention you give the show. If you like it, tell a friend. If you hate it, tell an enemy. But either way, check us out next time. Bye! Stupid, stupid rat creatures!